Court.
Now we're holding on page Yud Ches in Sanhedrin Ois Lamed Hey. So last time, the previous Ois had talked about the story with David and Avishag Hashunamis. At the beginning of Melachim, Melachim Aleph, whatever, it tells how David was old, he was cold, he couldn't warm up, so his advisors told him that we should have a young lady whose body heat will help warm you up. And they found Avishag Hashunamis, and she was doing that service for David. The Gemara had pointed out the same way as a king's personal effects and his official royal things like a scepter and whatnot cannot be used by anybody else the same way. For example, she's considered an item that David used, and therefore she would be mutter to Shlomo because David never had relations with her, so she would be remain mutter to Shlomo, but she would be also to anybody else, including Adoni Yahu, another son of David who tried to grab the kingship for himself. And sure enough, actually, the Pesukim can tell us how afterwards he went to Bathsheba and tried to, and asked her to ask Shlomo to allow him to marry Avishag, and Shlomo saw through it and realized that Adoni Yahu thereby is being a murdered by Malchus and trying to take for himself something that belonged to the king. So, continuing on this topic with Avishag, the Gemara says, Omer of Shaman Ba'aba. But now, we have to consider, the Pasuk is saying that David didn't have relations with her, and you had in the previous piece that he told her, I can't marry you, you're also to me, and she claimed that you're just making an excuse, and David demonstrated to her that it's not an excuse. Now we know that the Gemara has established that a king is limited to 18 wives. So now, if he were to marry Avishag, she'd be the 19th, and it would be also to him. The question is, though, so why does he divorce one of his wives and marry her? So that's the Gemara says, Amar of Shaman Ba'aba, Boyer E Kamakosha Gerushin. Come and see how bad and how difficult divorce is. They gave David a special heter for Yichud. Now, you had an earlier piece with the whole story with Amnon and Tamar, where after that, the Chachamim made a Gzera, including David's own Beis Din, and the other, and the Chachamim of that time made a Gzera against Yichud Pnuya. Now, you have this Yichud with someone who's actually osir to you in marriage, Arayas, which is osir min HaTorah, the Gemara discusses it at the end of Kiddushin, but Yichud with an unmarried girl to whom you would actually be able, to marry Lahalacha was not osir min Arayasa, but after this affair of Amnon and Tamar, then the Chum made a Gzera against that. Because you have the whole point, Tamar is not really Amnon's sister, even though the Pasuk presents her as such. She was born from a Yifas Toyar, and she's not considered halachically related to Amnon, etc. So she would have been mutter in marriage to him. But now, when this whole thing happened, the Chacham made a Gzera against Yichud with an unmarried girl. So now, the Chachamim had to bend that Gzera and make a special exception for David to be able to be alone with Avishag. And they didn't give him a heter, instead to divorce one of his wives and marry Avishag. Now, on a Parshat Traf, Mefoshim explained that the medical science of that time held that she's only going to have her full body heat if she's a Bsula, and therefore he can't have relations with her because it would defeat the purpose. And then there's the whole point that we were learning before, that David was doing this as a form of tshuva for the whole affair involving Bathsheba. But nevertheless, the Gemara is saying still there might have been a possibility of the Chachamim might have told him, look, David, you know, you're going to be alone with this girl every day, marry her, as she herself had told to David. But instead, they said, fine, you know what, we're willing to allow you Yichud with a Pnuya, rather than you should divorce one of your wives. So we see how bad divorce is. The Chidah and Ben Yehoyada bring up a point, actually. Maybe you could say, you know what, though, you think about it, a kid, it's different with a king. In this parak, the Gemara talks about that a king's almana is not allowed to marry anybody else. The machlok is whether she can marry another king, but here the next king is going to be Shlomo, and he can't marry any of his father's wives anyhow. They'd be an heir to him. But in any case, nobody else is allowed to marry her. So fine, you could say then they're not going to allow David to divorce one of his wives, because then that poor woman is going to be stuck forever. Well, what about that? Does that necessarily prove the case with a regular person where she could easily remarry? So Ben Yehoyada says, granted, but after all, we do know that David also had pilagshim. Besides that he had regular wives, he had pilagshim, which are not full wives, concubines, they call them in English. And you have, in particular, 10 of them that had been raped by Avshalom during his rebellion. They're anyway also to everybody. The Pasuk mentions that they were kept. David kept them in the palace and took care of them, but he never again had relations with them. So he could have easily divorced one of them. They're stuck either way. And nevertheless, they didn't, because as bad as, fine, he separated from them, but to divorce them, the Gemara is saying, still would have been far worse. So the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Elazar, Kol Megarish Es Ishto Rishona. A man divorces his first wife, Afilu Mizbeach Mored Olav Demoris. Even the Mizbeach sheds tears for him. Shenema, as we find in a pasuk in Malachi. Now Malachi, he was the last of the Nevi'im. He's upbraiding and giving musar to the Jewish people for a number of things they're doing wrong at the beginning of the second Beis Mikdash. One of them is we find that there were Jewish men who were divorcing their wives often in order to marry Goyish wives, which was a whole other problem that was going on at that time of intermarriage. The Medrash explains basically what happened was when Jewish families came from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael to rebuild the second Beis Mikdash and to rebuild Eretz Yisrael, many of the Jewish women lost their good looks because, you know, it's the trouble of traveling on the road. Travel was a lot more difficult then than it is now. And the hard work of rebuilding and everything that ruined their good looks. So many of these men, some of these men at least, decided then we're not attracted to our wives anymore, so they divorced them and married Goyish wives. So now the pasuk says, the Navi says to them, "V'zos shenis tasu," this is the second thing that you're doing wrong, meaning besides that you're marrying Goyish women, "Kaseis dimas mizbach Hashem begomer," you're causing the mizbeach of Hashem to be covered with tears. Parshat Pshat is the women who were divorced are coming and flying around the Mizbeach HaYitochan that our husbands are abandoning us and divorcing us. What do we do wrong? But here the Gemara is taking it in the sense that the Mizbeach itself is shedding tears that these couples are breaking up. Uchtim, and the pasuk continues, V'amartem al Mavagomer. So the Navi says to the people, you're going to say, what is it for? What's the problem? And the answer is that you're divorcing, you're being unfaithful to your wives and divorcing them. V'hi chavertecho v'eshes b'risecha. She is your companion and the wife of your covenant, meaning the one that you first made a covenant with. You married her as your first wife, and now you're going and divorcing her, and the Mizbeach is crying for that. Why does the Mizbeach, the Gemara mentions this at the end of Gittin as well, why specifically the Mizbeach cries for them? So there's a lot of different explanations. Marashah brings the point that when a couple is married, then every so often, there are going to be korbanos brought. When they have children, then the woman is going to bring a korban for the birth. If she becomes a zava, she's going to be bringing a korban for that. Okay, a zava, in principle, she could be when she's not married as well, but the pashto said she might not be in such a hurry to bring the korban. So now, therefore, so the Mizbeach, in effect, has what to cry about because there's fewer korbanos being brought because there are couples breaking up. So there's that. There's a lot of other different points. Etz Yosef brings a point over here that Adam and Chava were originally created as one body, the Gemara mentions in other places, and they were created from the place of the Mizbeach. So now when he divorces his wife and breaks up that couple that should be together, then it has an effect on the Mizbeach, and therefore the Mizbeach cries for it. The Rebbe talks about an idea. There's a sicha in Toshin Yud Tes. The Rebbe did a hadron on Masechta Gittin and discussed the end of Gittin at great length, part of it being this Gemara. And the Rebbe explains, basically, there's a Gemara in Ksubas that explains that the name Mizbeach itself represents simple meaning. Mizbeach is just a place for Zvachim, a place for Korbanos. But the Gemara explains in Ksubas that it's actually an acronym for the things that the Mizbeach accomplishes for us Jewish people. Among others, Mezin, that it provides sustenance. Through it, Hashem provides sustenance and mezonos to us, and meziach, it removes our averus, mechaper, and so forth. So the point is, in other words, we see that mezin is placed first, even before the meziach and mechaper, even before the averus are removed and forgiven, already the mezbeach is being the conduit through which Hashem provides us mezonos. So now, therefore, so what happens is then, So when there's a divorce, when a couple breaks up, then the Mizbeach is shedding tears in the sense that now that goes against the whole purpose of the Mizbeach's existence, which is to keep strong the bond between the Jewish people and Hashem, who are, after all, compared to a husband and wife, to remove and clean up our averus. And here, now the analog of that, the bond between husband and wife is being broken up, and therefore the Mizbeach cries for it because it goes against the very purpose that the Mizbeach is there for in the first place. In this connection, the Gemara continues. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, v'itamer Rabbi Elazar, ein ishke shel adam meisa elim kein mevakshim menu momen ve'ein loy. A man's wife dies only if it's because he's being demanded money of him and he doesn't have. What kind of money are we talking about? So what kind of money are we talking about? Marshall refers to a Tosfos elsewhere that says it can mean that he stole money and now he's not paying it back. However, a different explanation is that it means, based on the context of the Gemara, it's talking of other places where this Gemara is brought, it's talking about when he made a neder to give to Hekdesh or Tzedakah or what have you, and is not fulfilling that neder. So now his wife might die because of that. Now, we're not saying, in other words, that Ibn Yaakov points out, we're not saying, I mean, you know, she may have her own Averis. What we mean is, if she's going to die because of her husband's Averis, it's not just going to be because of any Averis of his, it'll be specifically because of this kind of thing, of him not paying back money that he's supposed, that he's not paying money that he's supposed to. One of the places where this point is brought, the Shittim Kubetzis makes a point. So, okay, you have to ask though, still, if he's doing wrong, why is she suffering for it? Why is she dying for it? So the Shittim Kubetzis elsewhere gives an explanation. He says, we're talking about where you tell the guy, you, why aren't you paying off what you owe, whether Gezel or Hekdesh, as the case may be. And he says, because I don't have the money, all of it is tied up for, all of it is Meshubad to my wife's Ksuba. And she backs him up on that. So now, therefore, she's responsible for it as well. If she were willing to forego some part of her ksuba, then he'd have what to pay back. So now, therefore, she shares in the blame for it. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, first the Pasuk says, be careful with what you say, be careful with your nedarim, and the Pasuk continues, im ein l'chol shalim, if you don't have what to pay, loma yikach mishkovcha mitachtecha, why should it be that Hashem will take away the one with whom you lie from underneath you? So in other words, you're the one with whom you lie is your wife. So therefore, so in other words, we see from that that a person's wife may die as a result of this kind of thing. And further, Rabbi Yechanan says in this connection, Kol Adam Shemesa Ishti Rishona, a man whose first wife dies, Kilo Chora Vesa Mikdash B'yomav. It's as if the Vesa Mikdash was destroyed during his time. Shenemar, as we find in Yechezkel, the Pasuk says, Ben Adam, that was Hashem's nickname for Yechezkel throughout the Sefer, Hinini lekeach mimchas machmad einecha b'magefa. Behold, I'm going to be taking away the beloved one of your eyes, meaning your wife, in a plague. And Hashem tells him, Lois sisboid, you should not mourn for her, Lois sivke, and not cry, Lois sovid, you must not even allow yourself to shed tears. The Pasuk goes on to explain that Hashem is telling Yechezkel, this is going to be you're going to be a living example for the Jewish people with this. And Hashem goes on to tell Yechezkel, you're not going to do the regular, you're not going to prave the regular dinim of Avelos. In fact, the Gemara in Moed Katan learns a number of the dinim of what an Ovel was supposed to do and not supposed to do from these psukim in Yechezkel. Basically, whatever Hashem tells Yechezkel to do is what an Ovel ordinarily should not do, and vice versa. And the idea is, the Pasuk explains, that Hashem tells him, you're going to be a living example for the Jewish people. You're going to tell them that, look, if the Jewish people in Eretz Yisrael don't do tshuva, the Mishmikdash is going to be destroyed, then everybody is going to be mourning, and nobody's going to be praving Avelos for that either. Because what's one point of Avelos is, one person has suffered a loss, everybody else comes in and sits with him and tries to comfort him and make him feel better and commiserate with him and whatever. But if everybody's in the same situation, then nobody's going to be bothering to prava avelos because nobody can comfort each other. We're all sharing the same suffering. So therefore, so the Hashem tells Yechezkel, that's how it's going to be. You're going to tell the Jewish people that this is how it's going to be when the Beis Hamikdash is destroyed. So, and Hashem continues, Vadabrel Omba Burker, I spoke to the people, I told the people in the morning about what's going to happen, about Thomas Ishtibarev, my wife had passed away the previous evening, and sure enough, he wasn't praving Avelos, and everybody was wondering why, and then he explained to them, Uchtiv, and he says to them in Hashem's name, Hinni Mechalas Mikdashi, I'm going to desecrate my Mikdash, Go'in Uzchem, the height, the strength of your power, Umachmad Einechem, and the beloved one of your eyes. You love the Bis Mikdash, and you consider it your strong point, Gashmius and Beruchnius, now it's going to be desecrated and taken away. So we see, in other words, the Pasuk is very clearly equating the death of Yechezkel's wife and the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash. So therefore, so now, if his wife dies during his first wife, during his lifetime, then it's considered as though the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed in his time. Marshall explains like this. A person's relative dies, there's a certain amount of avelos for it, but eventually, you get over it in a certain sense. You have. I mean, there were the various stages of Elos up to and including 12 months. And after a while, Hames Mishtakach Min Alev, it's a natural thing that Hashem made that a person forgets about his deceased relative. On the other hand, here the Gemara is mentioning that, as the Gemara goes on to say over here, that a person's first wife, there's no substitute for her. Therefore, in other words, even though, eventually the technical time of Avelos is over, but there's still always a hole where there's still always a hole in his heart where she was. And therefore, it's the same thing as the Beis Hamikdash, where even thousands of years after the Beis Hamikdash has been destroyed, we're still mourning for it. So therefore, that's the comparison between his wife and the Beis Hamikdash. So that's one explanation. And again, there are a lot of different explanations what exactly the connection is between his wife and the Beis Hamikdash. We have a lot of places where the Beis Hamikdash itself is compared to the home of the husband and wife. We had actually earlier in our Masechta, we had where a number of things where a person is walking along and saying, and one of them is where he's saying that my wife and I used to be able to be together on the point of a knife, and now we can't even be on a 60 amma bed, and that was a metaphor for the Mishkan versus the Beis Hamikdash. There's a lot of places where it talks about that the Mishkan and later on the Beis Hamikdash is like a marital home of us and Hashem. So therefore, that's also the connection. The Gemara continues. Amar Rabbi Alexandroi, kol adam shemese ishte biyamav, a man whose wife dies during his lifetime, olam choshach badai, the world is dark for him. The world becomes dark for him. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, choshach ba'olai, the light has become dark in his tent, and his tent means his wife. And ba'olai doesn't just mean in his tent, it means, Rashi explains, because of his tent. The word ba'olai, his tent, means his wife. We find, for example, after Matan Torah, Hashem tells the people, shuvu lachem la'olechem, you can return to your tents, meaning before Matan Torah, you had the issue of being with your wives, now you can return to normal family life. You find in halacha, for example, in Matzora, is v'yosha michutz la'olai shivas yamim, there's a stage of his tara when he has to stay away from his wife for 7 days. We see that ba'olai is used to refer to his wife. So choshach, his light becomes dark, be'ahaloi, because of his wife. Because his wife has died, the neiroi and his candle, olav yidach, goes out and sputters and goes out on him, meaning in his presence. So in other words, his light goes out and as his candle sputters and fades out because of ahaloi, because his wife has died. Marsha explains, the Gemara tells us like this in Yevamos. There's a whole sugya over there about the importance of marriage and pruvu and all that. And the Gemara points out there's a lot of areas of life where a husband provides the raw materials and then the wife develops them into something useful for the household. We find that in Chassidus all over the place when we have Chochma and Bina, the Chochma is the male and Bina is the female, you have the same kind of thing. You have an idea that you conceive in the Chochma and then it gets developed in Bina. So you have in a husband and wife relationship, that's how it is also. He provides he for example, the Gemara uses the expression of that, he brings home wheat. But you can't eat wheat. She turns it into bread, which you can actually eat, and so forth. With other examples, and the Gemara has the expression over there that she enlightens his eyes and puts them on his feet. So now, therefore, Marshall says, now she died. Now that light has gone away. Rabbi Yosef Reb Chanina says also his footsteps become shorter. So Marashar explains, this also fits with it. The Gemara says over there, Mami Datay al Raglov, she makes him stand, she helps him stand firmly on his feet. Well now, when his wife dies, then it's like, as if he's unsteady on his feet. So he can't take normal size steps anymore. Now it's like he has to take smaller steps because he's afraid of falling over because he doesn't have his wife supporting him anymore. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, also in that connection in Eov, Yetsu Tzadei Onoi, the steps of his strength become narrower. So in other words, until now he was taking strong, big steps, and now they become narrower and shorter because like as if he's afraid he's going to fall over. Rabbi Bohu and Rabbi Bohu says also his advice falls away. In other words, like this, he was able to take advice with his wife and confide in her and be able to get advice from her of what to do. Now he loses that. Shenema, as that same pasuk continues, his advice is thrown away from him. So it's not just the practical advice that he gets from her. Marashar points out, you also have Vatsasa Shem Hisokum. So, and you have Ishvi Isha Zochu Shchina Beneihem. When you have a husband and wife together living properly, then you have the Yud and the Hay together, and they have the Shchina together with them. Now she dies, and therefore that Atzas Hashem goes away, and therefore now the Sashti Chehu Atzas, it's thrown away from him, and he loses that advantage. Then you know you had to point out that also what you have is he explains all these three things in a sense like this. He says, so you have a husband and wife are married and they share the household duties between them. So for the most part, he goes out and works wherever he works and then makes a parnasa, and she takes care of matters at home. Now then, if his wife dies, he has to take over a lot of the duties at home. So, for example, let's say normally a working man, when is he home? Usually only at night, because during the day he's out working. Now, like this, he has to be at home during part of the day as well. So, therefore, Ben Yoyada says, it's as if like part of his day has now become his night, where he usually would have been home helping to take care of the kids or whatever by night. Now he's doing that by day as well. And the shorter steps he explains in a similar vein, like now he can't travel as far away on business and on work and whatever, because again he has to be closer to the home front to be available for his kids to be able to run the household by himself. So it goes with all of that also. Ion Yaakov mentions another point as well. The Gemara tells us in other places effects that happened after the Churban that we lost our ability for Eitzah, which is why we're saying over here with such the Chayu Atzasei. You have, for example, the Gemara mentions that when a person gives a krecht, it breaks half of his body, it breaks a lot of his strength. So therefore, in that sense over here, since we're saying his wife dying is like the Bis Mikdash being destroyed, so that causes now the same effect that now his steps become smaller and he loses a lot of his strength. The Gemara continues. To begin with, now until now, here all this time we've been talking about the end of a marriage, whether they get divorced, and we're saying what a terrible thing that is, or whether his wife dies, and all of the effects they have of that. Let's talk about the beginning of the marriage in the first place. To begin with, to even make a shidduch, to join two people together, is as difficult as kriyas yamsuf. Not difficult in the sense, obviously, Hashem, nothing's difficulty for Hashem, then nothing's difficult for Hashem, but it means, in other words, in a certain sense, like Hashem has to override Derech HaTeva for it. Usually Hashem runs the world according to Derech HaTeva. It's, so to speak, difficult for Hashem to override that and go in a method of nisim. But to make a zivug between two people is in a sense like that, and therefore it's, like, so to speak, difficult for Hashem. So Maharsha explains, particularly, we're talking about over here, we're talking about a zivug sheni. As the Gemara is going to go on to point out over here, it's also at the beginning of Sota, there's a difference between Zivug Rishon and Zivug Sheni. The Zivug Rishon, a couple's first marriage, we often talk about that as a Basherta and a Basherta. The Mekubalim point out it's not always literally the first person that one marries. Sometimes it might be a person is not able to find their actual Zivug Rishon the first time around. Sometimes what is really their Zivug Rishon they end up marrying only later on. But anyway, but ordinarily we're talking about first and second chronologically. So here we're saying in particular the second one, which depends on, now the Gemara explains in Sota, that depends on a person's maising. The Gemara says at the beginning of Sota, Ein mizavgim lo la'odim alofi maisav, a person is given a zivug according to their actions. If they're acting good, they get a good zivug, and otherwise not. And the Gemara explains over there that's primarily zivug sheni. So therefore, somehow Shah explains, so a zivug then depends on the person's, on the people's maisim, and therefore, in a sense, it's similar to Kriyas Yamsuf, where Hashem, where the Makatra game, after all, we're arguing, what's the difference? Why should the Jewish people deserve to be saved and the Mitzvim drown? And ultimately, it's because of their maisim. So that's the similarity. Then between Kriyas Yamsuf and a zivug. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, Elikim Moshe Yechidim Baisa, Hashem causes individuals to dwell together in a house, meaning makes shidduchim, zivugim between couples. Motzi Asirim Bakeshores, he brings out the prisoners Bakeshores. Now the simple meaning of Bakeshores means in chains. So in those prisoners who were in chains, then Hashem brings them out. Pshat is, in other words, the pasuk is saying different great things that Hashem does. He helps people form families, and he also releases prisoners from their bonds. But here the Gemara says, first of all, Tikri Motzi Asirim Elakim Motzi Asirim. To make it more clear, it's not the pasuk is not mentioning two unrelated great things that Hashem does. It's comparing one to the other. Moshi Vichinim Baisa, like Motzi Asirim Bakeshores. And what is Al Tikri Bakeshores Elabhi Vishiros? Read the word Bakeshores as a composite of Bechi Vishiros, crying and singing. So this is Yetzias Mitzrayim, and more particularly Kriyas Yamsuf, where the Jewish people are singing, and the Mitzriim, who are being drowned and killed, are crying. So therefore, so there was B'chi and Shiros at the same time. A different explanation, Marsha brings over here from a medrash, the word bakashores, Rashi brings it actually on the pasuk in, Rashi brings it at the beginning of Sota, the word bakashores also means Moshe kosher. Hashem brought us out of Mitzrayim in the most pleasant weather possible month. Like this, Hashem could have just as well made Yetzias Mitzrayim happen in Tevis or something, but it would be too cold, or in Tammuz, it would be too hot. Instead, Hashem brought the Jewish people out of Mitzrayim in Nisan, which is the nicest kind of weather. You see, by the way, it talks about in Sfarim, you see from that, don't just thank Hashem for the big things like Yetzias Mitzrayim, look at the little details as well, the fact that Hashem was so careful to do it in the right season, and also realize how Hashem wanted to make sure there's not even the slightest possibility that anybody should be complaining about anything, even ad kadei kach, that Hashem is going to make sure that it happens in the season with the nicest weather, even though you could argue, whenever Hashem took the Yidden out of Mitzrayim, they would have been grateful for it, but nevertheless, Hashem even looked after that little seemingly unimportant detail like that. So that's also Motzi Asir and Bakal Sharis. But we see that it's comparing Moshe Vichkin and Baisa, making people, setting up individuals to form a household like Motzi Asir and Bakal Sharis, like taking out the prisoners, the Jewish people, in the time of Bechi Vashiros and in the time of Bakal Sharis in the best possible season. So we see Koshal Zabim Kriyas Yamsuf. There's a famous story in the Medrash in that connection where a Roman lady asks Rabbi Yossi, you know, you say that Hashem created the world in 6 days, so what's he been doing since then? So Rabbi Yossi says he's making Zivugin. Big deal. Making Zivugin, anyway, can do that. She says, I have a thousand slaves and 1,000 maidservants. I'm going to make Shaduchim between all of them. And she goes and lines them up and pairs them off basically at random. The next day, every couple is coming to her with complaints, we can't get along. And they're beating each other up and whatever, a huge amount of domestic violence going on over there. And she goes over to Rabbi Yossi and says, you know what, fine, I got to give in. Yeah, you're right, and I didn't know what I was talking about. So the Gemara asks, Amy, is that so? You're telling me that making Zivugim is so difficult and it requires overriding Derech HaTeva and all of that? V'ha'omer Rabbi Yehuda Omer Rav, Arboim Yoim Kodim Yetziras Avlad, 40 days before a baby is formed. Now, what that means is, you often have people thinking that it means, in other words, 40 days after, that it means 40 days before a baby is conceived. Actually, what it means is at the time of conception. The Gemara discusses in various places, especially in the Masechta Nidah, since it has certain implications, v'halacha, that a baby reaches a certain stage of formation after 40 days of pregnancy. At that point, you can start telling whether it's a male or female, and it has certain implications in halacha, whether it's considered a baby, or until then it's considered maya ba'alma, it's considered kind of like water, which has various implications in halacha. So Abroimim Kodim Yetziras Avlad actually means at the time of conception. So at the time when the baby is conceived, 40 days before the body is formed to the extent that it can be called a vlad, basko yotzes vaymeres, a basko comes out and announces, bas ploni the ploni, the daughter of ploni is going to marry ploni. Marasha, by the way, points out in Sota the reason why do you say bas ploni the ploni? Why not just say plonis the ploni? The answer is because you find, it's not always the case, but you often find that a husband is somewhat older than his wife. Sometimes a little bit, sometimes a couple of years, whatever. So when he's conceived, his wife may not even been conceived yet. So therefore we can't say her name. All we can say is Bas Pliny, the daughter of Pliny, who eventually is going to be conceived and born. So we see, in other words, it's already Bashert from beforehand. So what do you mean it's so difficult? And the answer is like Kasha, and Haba Zivug Rishon, Haba Zivug Sheni, that here it depends on the Zivug Rishon, Zivug Sheni business. Is it a first marriage or a second marriage? The first one is going to be Bashert. It's going to be predetermined from when the baby is conceived. The second one, a second marriage is going to be something that's going to depend on the person's Maisim, and therefore we're saying that's very difficult, and so to speak, and it requires Hashem to override Derech HaTeva for that. And here again, you have it's pointed out in Kisvei Arizal and other places that Zivug Rishon and Zivug Sheni doesn't always necessarily mean the actual first marriage and the actual second marriage. Sometimes it can be that a person doesn't end up marrying their Basheret and Basherta the first time around for various reasons, and it happens only the second or a later time. In fact, by the way, that also has implications in halacha. The halacha is, even though you have certain times a year, sfira and the 3 weeks, you're not allowed to get married, but to get engaged, you're allowed to any time. Even, for example, it says on Tisha B'av, shema yikadmenu acher, the Gemara says in Moed Katan, because somebody else might get to her first. But in other words, even though she's your basherta, nevertheless, the Eibishter is not going to prevent that somebody else may end up marrying her ahead of you, and therefore go ahead and get engaged as soon as you can. So Zivug Sheni, then, in other words, we're saying that's the kind that's kosher to Kriyas Yamsuf. Okay. The Gemara goes on. Amr Shmuel Bar Nachman, Lakol Yesh Tmura Chutz Me'eshes Ne'urim. There's a substitute for anything else. Anything else, you lose it, you can get a new one. Chutz Me'eshes Ne'urim, with the exception of a wife of youth, the wife that a man married first. We said before that when she dies, it's as if the Beis Mikdash was destroyed, and there's no substitute for the Beis Mikdash, and his world becomes dark for him, etc. Maharsha points out that that's also why, you know, we find, look what happened to Eov. He lost his children, he lost his possessions, he lost his everything, but he didn't lose his wife. Because that would be something, Mela, even his children, he could get back afterwards. We talked about when we learned about it in Bava Basra, does it actually mean that his original children died and now he had new ones later on, or does it mean the other one, the old ones, were hidden away and he didn't know, he thought they were dead and really they were just hidden away by the Sutton and they came back? But even if we say that they were actually new children, fine, no, you can't just replace one child with another, but still it's not necessarily such a permanent loss as an Eishes Ne'urim. So therefore, with everything that Hashem is telling the Sultan, go ahead, take this, this, and this away from Eov, he can't possibly tell him, take away his wife, because that would be, there's no way to get that back afterwards. In Nehemiah, as the Pasuk says, the Eishes Ne'urim kisimois, could a wife of one's youth be rejected? This is the Novi, Yeshayah, saying to the Jewish people, you think Hashem has rejected you, Chas V'Shalom? No, how could a wife of one's youth be rejected? You Jewish people are like, so to speak, the wife of Hashem's youth. Even you might have, he doesn't like you, but that's only a temporary thing. He's never going to get any kurdas ruach. He's never going to get such satisfaction from anybody else, and therefore Hashem will never reject you. And in fact, we know, the Medrash says, Iyun Yaakov mentions it over here, that Hashem swore that he's not going to replace us with any other nation, and we swore that we're not going to replace him with any other power. So it really is like a first marriage between us and Hashem, and therefore Kisimois, it can never be rejected, and it can never be rejected as a permanent thing, Chas V'Shalom. By the way, this is one of the explanations why the upcoming Yom Tov is called Shavuos. On the face of it, it's Shavuos, because it comes after 7 weeks of counting Sfira, but there's also a famous explanation that it's also Shavuos, as the plural of Shavua, as in the Shavua that we swore to Hashem, and Hashem swore to us. The Gemara continues. Rabbi Yehuda taught Rabbi Yitzchak, his son, the following point. A man has only, really only has true satisfaction. Koras ruach literally means like his mind is cool. Like, in other words, he's able to be calm and feel at ease. Elam ishter rishona, only with his first wife. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, Yehi mekor chabaruch. Your fountain, your source should be blessed, usmach me'eches ne'urecha, and be happy with the wife of your youth. So first of all, it means the wife of your youth. It means, in other words, your baruch, your fountain, your source will be blessed. But Maharsha points out the word makurcha actually has, first of all, it can be from the same shoresh as kodas, as in kodas ruach. So therefore, you really have directly then the kodas ruach comes from usmach me'eches ne'urecha. Second of all, also, makorcha means as you were first formed, whereas we said before, even before the baby is formed, Hashem has already determined who the basherta is going to be for him, and therefore, so, yehi makorcha baruch, your source, when you were first conceived, should already be blessed that you should be happy with the wife of your youth, because you won't find anybody else like her. Omale, so Rabbi Yitzchak asks his father, kagain man, who would be an example of that? Amalei, so he says, to an imcha, for example, your wife, for example, your mother. She's my first wife, and I have kodas ruach from her. So the Gemara asks, Eini, is that so? There was another time when the same Rabbi Yehuda was teaching his son Rabbi Yitzchak a pasuk in Kehelas, Umoitzani marmi mavas, I find even more bitter than death. Shlomo is saying, as her isha, ashehim etzodim b'charomim, a woman who is trapped and snares. So in other words, a woman who harasses her husband and gives him a hard time. Va'amalek yigoyin man, and again Rabbi Yitzchak asked him who's an example. Va'amalek yigoyin imcha, and he says you're like your mother. So what is she? Is she marmi mavas and mitzodim b'charomim, or is he having kodas ruach from her? So the answer is misgift kifa. She's a very strong-willed lady. She gets angry very easily. Avuri ma'avra b'mili. However, she's also forgiving. Rashi says ma'averes al midos seha. She's more easily forgiving of people insulting or doing things to her. So in other words, al derech like you have in Pirkei Avos. You have the arba midos over there, where one of them is noyach lichus, noyach lerotzes, so easily angered but also easily calmed down. So that can be a good thing. So as much as, in other words, she gets angry very easily and therefore mitzodim v'charamim, and there's a certain bitterness in it, but she also calms down and is willing to be forgiving of insults to her easily, and therefore he has kodas ruach from her. A different explanation of it, an interesting explanation that some Mephoshim say, is what it means is that Rabbi Yehuda is telling the phrase, you have to ask, after all, why is Rabbi Yitzchak asking the question in the first place? Does he need to hear Lashon Hara about some particular woman that she's Ma'ami Mavis? So one interesting explanation is that Rabbi Yehuda is telling him, you should know, your mother is born with a very strong, a difficult temperament. She's a very easily angered person, but she's worked on herself over the years, so now she's aburi ma'abra b'mili. Now she's trained herself to be a calmer person. So therefore, to begin with, she would have been ma'ami mavis, but now that she's worked on herself and made herself and then transformed her midas, then koras ruach me'ishti v'shoina. Which, by the way, you should realize is no easy thing. There's a famous word that's brought from Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, who says it's easier to learn through the whole Shas than it is to change even one midah. So if we're saying that Rabbi Yehuda's wife changed that midah, and that's a tremendous accomplishment of hers. There's an interesting idea also, the Chidah, I think, says on this, that we find that there's a Gemara in Nidah where Shmuel says about Rabbi Yehuda that he's higher than a person. He's like on the level of a malach in terms of a lack of taivus and in terms of a lack of taivus for gashmiyistic things. So now the Gemara tells us in Yevamos that one point is, it says over there, I think Rav Chiya had a wife who had a hard time getting along with, but he says, you know what, at least Dayenu Shemagabas Fanenu Matzilas Tesonim Menachet. If nothing else, a wife helps raise your children and saves you from Averis, because like this, you know, a man has Tivus, and the fact that he has a wife, he's able to satisfy those Tivus in a Tohardik way. So now, then, the vote would be over here. Rabbi Yehuda doesn't have those taivas, because he's on the level of a malach, as Shmuel says about him. His son, Rabbi Yitzchak, is already grown, so he doesn't need his mother to raise him anymore. So therefore, so you would think that in that case, well, what's the point? And nevertheless, Rabbi Yehuda tells him there's still kodas ruach from her, because she's Isser, because after all, she's Isser Ishtar Rishona. Okay. The Gemara continues. Amar of Shmuel Bar Unya, Mishmei Derab, Isha Goylam Hi. A woman, don't let your wives hear this necessarily, at least not with a lot of good explanation. Isha Goylam Hi, a woman is an unformed kevi. We think of the word Goylam as like a stupid person or whatever, but really the basic meaning of Goylam is an unformed thing. We're going to have later in the Masechta, for example, we're just going to say that Adam was originally a Goylam. He was a mass of clay, and then the Eivishter shaped him into a person and put in him Ruach Chaim. So here, a woman is an unfinished kevi, before she gets married and has relations. In other words, the idea is that she's supposed to be a keli for being able to have children, but she's not ready for that yet. She still has her besulim. She's still not a finished keli in that sense. The ena kereset bris elul mishasa keli. She makes a covenant that she has a real deep rooted relationship only with the one who made her a keli, meaning her first husband, the one who took away her besulim and made her into a keli and made her into a fit keli for being able to have children. So in other words, Marsha points out, the same way as we said, a man has kodas ruach, has true satisfaction only from his first wife, the flip side is also true. She has only real true satisfaction and a bris only with her first husband, the one who made her into a keli. Kenema, as the pasuk says, Kivay Alayich Oisayich, your husband, the one who made you, Hashem Tzvakas Shmoy, his name is Hashem Tzvakas. So in other words, we're saying that, so to speak, the husband makes her into something new, into a keli that's fit for its purpose. And so Maharsha says, so the same thing you have before Matan Torah, we were also only like a golem. We didn't yet have Torah and mitzvah, so we're lacking our purpose. We're not yet a keli for our purpose in the world. Now, by Matan Torah, we married Hashem, so to speak, and we're made into a keli, which now is fit for purpose and able to be makabel Torah and mitzvahs. And a lot of my Morich Sidus, beginning with the Alter Rebbe, in particular, there's a mimer from the Rebbe Maharash, in particular, that develops it in some detail that talks about that this has to do with the whole idea of, in particular, what we do during davening and during Krishna, especially that we're kodesh bris. After all, a bris, as explained in many places, is the idea, even when there's no logical basis for the relationship anymore, nevertheless, you made a bris, and therefore it's l'mayla mitam v'das. So therefore, we kodesh bris only with the Eibishter, who made us keli, in the sense, in other words, that the Eibishter gave us the power to make ourselves a keli to Elikus by developing the sense of bittul towards the Eibishter, which in particular we do during davening, and especially during Krishna, and in that sense, then we have that bris, that supernatural, super rational relationship with Hashem, because He made us a keli, and because we then work on ourselves on becoming that keli. The Gemara finishes off. Tana, we learn in a brisa, ein ish meis evel ishtoi. When a husband dies, the one he really dies for most is for his wife. Only for his wife. In other words, she's the one who feels it the most keenly. Then Isha Mesa Elabaila, and when a wife dies, it's really mainly for her husband. Again, the same idea. In other words, they have this close, deep relationship, L'mayla mitam v'das, as a bris, and therefore when one of them dies, it's the other one who feels it most of all. Ain't ish meis elo the ishto shenemar, as we find in the pasuk by Yomos Elimelech ish Naomi at the beginning of Ruth. See, it has to do with Shavuos. It says that Elimelech, the husband of Naomi, died. Now we know that Elimelech is the husband of Naomi. It already says that in the Uri of Sukkim. So why is that the stress? Ish Naomi means when he died, who felt it the most is Naomi, his wife. Then Isha Mesa Elabaila, and when a wife dies, it's primarily for her husband. Most of all, Shenemar, as Yaakov says, Vani Bavoyi Mi Padon, as far as me, when I was coming from Padan Aram, Mesa Olai Rochel. Rochel died on me. So again, what's this on me, Olai? It means, in other words, it had a greater impact on me. And in fact, Rashi points out, after all, I mean, Yaakov had other wives as well, but she was Ishta Rishona. I mean, in a certain sense, not strictly speaking, because he married Leah first, but again, Rochel was more his Vasherta. She was the Akeres Abayas, Yaakov only worked for her, so therefore, so you're saying, Mesa Olai Rochel, her death impacted me more than anybody else. So it's primarily for him, and the same thing for the, and the same thing, and the same thing, the husband for his wife. Yeah. Yemye Mashiach Go'ola, Shvodesh 7. We have by when they came to Har Sinai, you have Vayichan Shom Yisrael on Rosh Chodesh, and Vayichan Ki Ishachar Belevachad, as Rashi says, and now therefore Derechet Zutta says, now Hashem said, now it's time to give the Jewish people the Torah. So what happened? They had the Achdus. How did they have such an Achdus? Is because of the Yichidah Shebe Nefesh. Because all of us have a Yichidah that's connected, and therefore they had that true Achdus when that Yichidah was Nisgala. Well, the same way, then, so that has to do very much with Torah Seshal Mashiach, which is also the Mashiach, is the Yechidah of the Jewish people, and Torah Seshal Mashiach is the Pnimiyus HaTorah, the Yechidah, which was given at that time, Behelim, it was given in a concealed, latent way in Matan Torah. Every day there's a mini Matan Torah, because we say, Arayna Mekabal Alay, Mitzvah Seshal, V'haftal Lerecha Kamoicha. And we do so every day. We have that day's Matan Torah, we say the Bracha Nosin HaTorah, and then we say, right shortly after that, we say the Arayna Mekabal. So that's the preparation that ever says for the Torah Chadoshim, Iti Tetzay, because after all, Mashiach can come every day, and therefore every day we have that mini Matan Torah, and that Vayichan Shom Yisrael. And the Gilui of Yechidah, which will eventually come out as the Yechidah Shabbat Torah, which Mashiach will reveal. Okay, continuing in Hilchos Tzitzis, so we're learning about cases where a person borrows somebody else's talis. So now, if somebody borrows a talis from somebody else that has tzitzis on it, so he borrows it, let's say, for example, he's a koyin, and he's a koyin, and he's borrowing it to duchen. So always borrowing it to get an aliyah, which we have in many kehillahs. They have the minhag that an oyla always wears a talis. Or to daven by the yomot, again, you have some people have the minhag to do that. So if the one who owns the talis knows that the other guy is wearing it l'shem mitzvah sittis, then you can assume he lent it to him for that purpose, that he should make a bracha. So it's considered like he gave matana amanas l'hachzir, and therefore the guy who borrows it can make a bracha on it as if it really was his. But if the owner of it does not know that the other one is wearing it l'shem mitzvah tzitzis, maybe he thinks he's only wearing it because it's chavrat tzibur, then we can't necessarily assume it was matana manas l'hachzir. So therefore, the borrower would not make a bracha on it. If he wants to make the bracha, then as Dalta Rebbe explained earlier, rishus v'yadeh he could. So it comes out in practice, in other words, one way or the other. He could make a bracha, but it is better if the other guy knows that he's actually doing it l'shem mitzvah, and then he can definitely make the bracha without any questions at all.
I'm not going to go to the next one.